This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Dan Bluestone joins me in studio. He is director of the Historic Preservation Program at the University of Virginia School of Architecture. His new book is Buildings, Landscapes, and Memory, Case Studies in Historic Preservation. And you will be at the Historical Society on Friday at 5:30. Where discount copies will be available. You going to do a reading then? Or
We're going to have a talk and some refreshments and roll out the book in a institution, the Albemarle Charlottesville Historical Society, which has been incredibly helpful in the research both on this book but also in our community. They're one of the real repositories of memory for our community.
Absolutely. They do terrific work and a whole wonderful team of volunteers there and a very, very small staff that do amazing things. And again, that's Friday. The Historical Society, if you've never been there, is on Lee Park. It's the old post office building, and it's on Lee Park downtown.
It's the old library.
It's the old library? I always get them confused.
The library moved into the post office.
That's right. So it's next to the library, and then the library became the post office. And, yep, sorry about that. I should know better. But it's down on Lee Park, and it's Friday at 5:30. We want to talk about the book. It's beautiful. And we want to talk about issues of historic preservation, especially here in a community that was just made for historic preservation, obviously. But before we do, you've been very involved, of course, with the work regarding McIntyre Park, which is a tremendous historic preservation effort that's been going on for decades in this community. As many, many people, thousands of people over the years, have tried to put a stop to this massive road. What was at one time a proposed highway, mini highway, through historic McIntyre Park. What's the latest? Where are we with this, Dan?
Well, Coy, it's actually still a highway. The road, as planned, will bring 24,000 cars a day through our central park in the city, through McIntyre Park. And so despite modifications along the way, I look at that strip of asphalt proposed and think, that's a highway. They try naming it. Different things, Meadow Creek Parkway, and then McIntyre Road extended. I think Paul Goodloe McIntyre gave that piece of land in perpetuity to the citizens of Charlottesville for a park and playground. Is probably turning somewhere in his grave to think that the asphalt strip that will bring 24,000 cars a day through the park that he gave is being named after him, McIntyre Road extended. What a thought. Yeah. At any rate, there have been some recent developments. When you and I talked a few weeks ago, Coy, it was right after three members of the five-member Charlottesville City Council voted to endorse a memorandum of agreement that outlines the mitigation that would be done to try to mitigate the impact of this highway through the park. And the thing you and I talked about is how pathetic the mitigation proposed is, and how they're just simply not following the federal laws that try to make sure that historic properties are not impacted by projects that either have permitting from the federal government or actual federal dollars involved. And what they had outlined in this memorandum of agreement was they would take some photographs and do some drawings of the park before they destroyed that section of the park, so we'd have a good record. That'll go into an archive. It won't affect the vast majority of people in our community. And then the other thing is they agreed to spend $30,000 planting native plants around one of the more unattractive water retention basins at the side of the highway. That was the sum total. That's what our compensation was for 24,000 cars a day in a landscape that...
It's so Orwellian, isn't it?
I mean, it really is.
And people know that I am no fan of this. I just don't think we should be building a road through a historic park. But it's this kind of stuff. It's gotten so incredibly Orwellian where the powers that be are like, basically, we don't give a rip.
Yeah, and we'll take photographs. That will show that we're being sensitive toward these historic resources. So the thing that you and I were talking about last time was how unbelievably inadequate Orwellian's a new adjective for this. That's great. And the thing that happened, Coy, that was so unbelievable is that actually organizations and agencies that are supposed to be looking over these projects, have now said, we're not signing that. Two of the major organizations that have to sign off on that memorandum of agreement, the Virginia Department of Historic Resources and the Advisory Council, the Federal Advisory Council on Historic Preservation, who have both come into this. The Advisory Council gets involved in very few of these sorts of cases, and yet this project has failed to meet the smell test for them. So they've been involved for over a year, and they looked at this, and both of these organizations basically said, you've got to be kidding. That's what you're going to do to mitigate the damage being done by 24,000 cars a day? And they said they won't sign this. They will not be parties to this. And so the question is, how is it that these organizations outside of our community, looking from afar, can see the basic hollowness of the proposed proposed memorandum of agreement, but three members of our city council push the button and X comes up on the screen and they've voted in favor of that? It makes no sense.
We're talking with Dan Bluestone of the University of Virginia. Mr. Hooja was on this program recently, this week. And I asked him about Meadow Creek Parkway and his support of it. And he's basically made the argument, you know, he said, you know, we need to balance our needs and we need to bring more cars downtown. That's the priority. And then he said something that I have heard for years, and I want to get your response to this. A lot of proponents of the Meadow Creek Parkway, the city part through the park, I personally have no problem with the county part if they want to, you know, create another access to Melbourne Road, but extending it through the park, a lot of people say, well, you know, it's only going through the side. It's only going through the east end of the park. It doesn't go through the middle of the park, so that makes it okay.
Yeah, Coy, I think the people that have made that argument ought to actually go to that east end of the park. And I know, as a member of this community, I've been here for over 15 years, and I think a lot of people simply haven't gotten into the park. And this is one of the things, that there's a municipal golf course there. It actually is an incredibly important design, designed by Fred Finley, who's one of the major golf course designers, a Scottish golf links-style golf course. But even the thing that's so striking about this project is, if we put a highway through that part of McIntyre Park, we will never do anything else with that part of McIntyre Park. If you think that, well, the golf course isn't a proper use for that, then think ahead. You know, this park's now been here since 1925. Think ahead another 80, 90, 100 years and try to imagine what our community would be like and how we might very well have use of that land. And the thing is that the road coming through the east part of the park actually blights one of the nicest parts of the park. You can actually be back there and totally lose visual and auditory connection with automobiles. It's an extraordinary
right in the middle of the
landscape
city, yeah.
In the middle of the city. And that's how that park was designed. And what's incredible, and again, there was some notion early on that we were getting replacement parkland north of Melbourne Road. That's not in our community. That's in Albemarle County. And it's also not really very accessible.
It's not connected to the park.
It's not connected. But the notion was, oh, well, we gave you some replacement parkland up there. And you go up there, and I think one of the things that worked out about having them open the Meadow Creek Parkway segment for those weeks is we really got a view of how bad it's going to be in McIntyre Park, because you cannot be on that so-called replacement parkland without being in constant contact with the sights and the sounds and the smell of automobiles and of the business, yeah, of the city.
It's like saying, I give you a replacement parkland. It's a median strip on a highway. That's what
right.
It feels like.
This is the notion. I mean, you really had the sense that that notion of replacement parkland, it could have only been designed by a VDOT highway engineer who just thought that all a park is a green blob thrown down on a map.
Yeah.
And yet it lacks the quality and the character of the east side of McIntyre Park. And I don't know whether Mr. Hooge has been back in that section. And unfortunately, I think large numbers of our residents. But this isn't just about us today. This is about future generations. This is about our children, our children's children. And I can tell you that there are sections of that park that will be blighted by this roadway that right now do just what parks do, which is to set up this incredibly strong contrast of getting into a landscape that is peaceful and close to nature and devoid of the hustle and bustle of automobiles.
Yeah, which is the very power of, for those of folks who've stood in some of the really remote parts of Central Park in Manhattan.
Absolutely.
In New York City, you know exactly what you're talking about.
That's right.
You really feel like you are so far out in the woods.
Yeah.
And then you come up on a rise and there's all the buildings.
Yeah.
It's an incredible experience.
And that experience exists on the east side of McIntyre Park. And once you put a road with 24,000 cars a day, you'll never be out of sight and sound of that on any section of the east side of McIntyre Park. From the railroad tracks east, you will not be, it will be the inescapable reality of that side of McIntyre Park. It will blight the entire landscape. And they say, well, or maybe Mr. Hooja, well, we're just taking this edge along, you know, the piece. The thing is that it will throw the entire side of the park into this blighted landscape. And the proof is in the pudding. Go, or now it's harder to do, but if you went north of Melbourne Road, you could see the future of the east side of McIntyre Park. It was there for plain sight for everybody to see.
If you just joined us, we're talking with Dan Bluestone of the University of Virginia, the very latest on the Meadow Creek Parkway. Dan, we've just got a few minutes left here. Let me ask you what you think folks like, you know, business interests in this community who really support this road and always have, or some folks who think, and it's misinformed and factually incorrect, that this is somehow going to take traffic off of Park Street. VDOT's own studies show that it's actually going to increase traffic on Park Street. What is it that these people aren't getting that, to me, and I've been studying this thing for more than 15 years, the Meadow Creek Parkway, and been writing about it, what is it that you think they don't get?
I think that for a long time we've had there's been the sense in this country that the solution to traffic problems are always to build roads. And if the solution to traffic problems was to build roads, we would have solved our traffic problems long ago. And the plain fact of the matter is what building roads does is just it adds to the sprawl, adds to the development out on the edge, and in the end of the day, increases the traffic on these roads.
Yeah. Let's go to the phones. Craig is in Charlottesville. Craig, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, I just caught the just got in the car, but everybody keeps talking about they're going to lose this golf course. Well, the way the golf course stands now, it's hardly used. I mean, it's not maintained. It's not mowed to golf course length, and the greens are nothing more than sand. If you take the land that's going to be left over after the parkway is built, and you turn it into a true, what you call executive par 3 golf course that's maintained like a golf course with real greens, you're going to increase the usage, and you still have your parkland. And the last comment I've got to make is you're talking about you can't build roads, but, I mean, getting around this town, if you ever tried to get around on Friday, there you need some roads to clean up some of this traffic. You can't have all the traffic on two roads in town. So I'll hang up and listen.
Craig, thanks for the call, buddy. I appreciate it. Dan?
Craig, the historic significance of this landscape was precisely that Fred Findlay, who also designed the Farmington Country Club golf course with grass greens and sand bunkers, here, this was a municipal golf course that was meant to have low maintenance by having sand greens. And you might not like that, but over the years, this has actually served its purpose. It was actually built in this community, interestingly, with major support of the Jewish business owners in downtown who simply did not have access to Farmington and the major golf clubs around in
this
town.
They couldn't get in.
Yeah. And I would say the same thing, the municipal golf course in McIntyre Park actually admitted African-Americans to their links long before private clubs around in this community. So Fred Finley came up with this extraordinary concept, which is let's build a low-maintenance, low-cost golf course. Now, some golfers might not like that.
Go to Penn Park.
But I think there are plenty of people in our community who appreciate the challenge of that. And if there's some issue about building roads, there are other places to build roads. Remember, we used to have plans for Western and Eastern bypasses. In fact, those were tethered together with the notion of a Meadow Creek Parkway. Somehow, all those have fallen by the wayside. Charlottesville City does not need additional roads, Craig, and people know that. And so we're getting
Charlottesville doesn't need additional roads. The county does. Charlottesville doesn't need more water. The county does.
Right.
So it can grow. And that's what's going on here. And yet the Charlottesville keeps rolling over saying, okay, county, do it again.
We get the infrastructure. We get the bill. And I just think that's unreasonable. I think the thing to do is to start building the city in a way that this park will become more and more accessible. And, Craig, if you don't like the golf course, maybe in 80 years your grandchildren would like a park there that doesn't have a highway running through it. And it'll be repurposed for some other purpose. So I don't get the argument.
Let's go to Scott in Charlottesville. Scott, really quick, buddy, go right ahead.
I was just going to comment also on the golf course. The reasons for it at one time probably made sense, but you know, Fred Finley's a great designer, but you know, the times have changed. Those merchants can be accepted to other clubs. Other courses have been built. There's a surplus of golf holes in the area, and I'm a golfer, but to make the case that that golf course needs to be preserved as a reason for anything else, I think is not good logic.
Scott, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. We're out of time, and I'm going to ask the listeners to stay with us. And I'm one of the ones who I agree with Scott. I think I'm one of the ones who would like to see more of a Central Park type of park there. We got plenty of other golf courses for people to play on.
Put a highway through there, and it forecloses all of those options. I'm not going to go to the mat defending the golf course. The point is that this is not simply cheap real estate for building highways on. This is not cheap real estate for building highways on. Let the highways be built. Let the businesses pay for those elsewhere.
Let's rejoin our conversation with Dan Bluestone. He is the director of the Historic Preservation Program in the School of Architecture at the University of Virginia. His most recent book is Buildings, Landscapes, and Memory. We'll go back to the phones. Bill is with us. Bill, you go right ahead, buddy.
Okay, well, I've got a little bit of a memory. Part of the road that is south of Melbourne Road is the former leaf dump, which formerly was a large curve in Melbourne Road when it was as twisty as Rye Road. So that's wasn't really part of the park at that time. Of course, the area along McIntyre Road, which is called the Skinks Branch Greenway, is also part of McIntyre Park along with Greenleaf Park. I'm not so much against the road as I am the building of the YMCA in the park, in the other section of the park.
Yeah.
The east side of the park has been largely forgotten, for instance, like east of the golf course going down towards Skinks Branch there is what you call Suicide Hill. No sledding.
Yeah.
Or you might die.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's beautiful down there.
And the railway, right away, of course, is through there, too. There's a flat section in there where it's kind of where the road is going.
Yeah.
But, you know, for the part that bothers me more than the road, which is in my backyard right now, essentially, I can hear the Albemarle section from my house. Where I live.
Yeah.
And I did notice an increase in noise, but it's not a whole lot more noise than I hear from 250 down through the valley there. So it's, you know, in deference to my neighbors on Park Street, I prefer to see that, just get it done, do it nicely, and not put the YMCA in the western half of the park.
Bill, thanks for the call, buddy. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Maybe put it over a walker where they're going to close the school.
All righty. Bill, thank you. That's Bill in Charlottesville. And let's go to Steve in Albemarle County. Steve, you go right ahead.
Hey, good evening. A couple points. One, I really don't agree that park usage will go down by putting a road through it. Greenleaf Park was created by 250 cutting through McIntyre Park, and that's probably one of the most used parks in the city. I mean, you ever try and get into that parking lot? It's nuts. And, you know, I keep hearing that the plan. Well, the problem was Rye Road and Park Street were never planned. Those were, what, deer paths that became horse trails that became roads. Excuse me, cold. And to say the city doesn't have a traffic problem or doesn't need more roads is ridiculous, because Park Street has put in the little pork chop plans and some of the other solutions the city's had. It's obvious there is a problem there, and this comes up with it, and I don't think that's really hallowed ground that needs to be guarded at the expense of people's safety or just common sense.
Steve, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. There's one vote for the road.
The common sense plan would be to start building the city differently and start creating different kinds of settlement and residential patterns. That's the common sense plan. You can't simply we don't have any trouble getting tens of thousands of people into downtown Charlottesville for Fridays at 5 for big events. That's not a problem. We're able to do that. They arrive there. And we ought to, hold on to. The thing is that when people, tens of thousands of people come to downtown Charlottesville, they're doing it because the community is attractive. You continue to gobble up prime pieces of the real estate in the city, public real estate, parks, and there's going to be less and less reason for people to come down. It makes it a less attractive community. If there's a real problem with transportation and development, I think that it ought to be the county's unwilling to make the tough decisions that will build additional road capacity in the county. They're not willing to really do what they want, apparently, the city to do with the city's cooperation of taking treating our public parks as just cheap real estate.
And it's a great irony that you have interest in the county who say, no, you can't build the Western Bypass or even the Eastern Bypass because you might endanger rural land, you might endanger parkland, you might lower the quality of my value of my estate here. So I don't want that. But we're going to put the road through the city's park, through right. their rural land.
People really do have a surprise coming when they think that this is going to relieve traffic on Park Street. Even VDOT, who sometimes have pretty suspect traffic studies, but even their traffic studies, which try to put a smiley face on this project, admit that within 10 years, Park Street is right back up to the capacity that it's at now. That's not relief. We ought to be thinking in a generational terms about this park.
We're talking with Dan Bluestone
about the city.
Of the University of Virginia. And let me change gears here. And
okay,
I want to
great.
Talk about sort of pull back here, pull the camera back. We've been talking about a specific instance of historic preservation, preserving this parkland. And when we talk about historic preservation, we don't just talk about parkland, this landscape. We talk about buildings as well, streetscapes. And your most recent book, Buildings, Landscapes, and Memory, Case Studies in Historic Preservation, and you'll be at the Historical Society at 5:30 on Friday launching the book. Give us your perspective on this. And when you teach this subject, what are the key issues here that we can sort of see at work with the Meadow Creek Parkway?
Right.
But also, let's talk about some other examples as well here locally.
Yeah. Well, I think that one of the things that's really clear is that this notion that we should have roads everywhere and increasingly create a homogeneous landscape of, traffic circulation. That's one of the things I'm talking about, is that we will erode the qualities and the character of what people find attractive about downtown. The thing they find attractive there is a sense of depth and history, a sense of connection to a unique place that isn't just the globalized, homogenized landscape that you see out 29 North. That's the niche that Charlottesville is now fulfilling. And increasingly, as we go for more and more global, homogenized landscapes, the thing that people are really seeking is the ability to have places and landscapes to hold on to that actually give them a sense of location in the culture, a sense of place in the landscape. That's the value of what historic preservation really provides people for. Also, it fuels the ability to think critically about the past and the implications of the past for the future. As we begin to think about how we are developing as a community, we have a lot to learn from history.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, and I'm going to paint with a broad brush here, but what we learn from the history of historic preservation, am I right in thinking that oftentimes some of the most virulent and proactive, in some cases, opposition to historic preservation can come from chambers of commerce and business community.
Yeah.
And yet, if you take the long view, they always seem to sort of come back around and say, well, I'm glad we did that, even though they didn't support it. You see that in places like Charleston and in other places in the country that have been aggressive about historic preservation, always opposed by the business community, and yet they end up being the biggest proponents and those who had take advantage and benefit from that historic preservation.
Well, I think one of the things that's actually has developed in our community recently and certainly in the 20th century in terms of historic preservation is communities beginning to understand that there's actually commerce to be gotten from the unique character. And you know, you can find in Charlottesville in the 19-teens and into the 1920s a recognition that this wasn't going to be a big manufacturing community. This wasn't going to be a big transportation center, that the economic viability and vitality was connected to two things, which in some ways were the same thing, and that is a sense of heritage, a sense of connection to presidents, a sense of heritage tourism. They were aware of that in the 19-teens and 20s, and the community started responding and understanding that actually to preserve those resources made economic sense. Now, the short-sightedness of people more recently saying that, well, we can just plow roads through anything and just all we want is lots of parking and is
more strip malls. And
is just the, you know, you can see the results of that, which is, again, to create this sense of dislocation, a kind of alienation of the public from these landscapes that they're forced to occupy. And in that context, the preservation of downtown Charlottesville, the preservation of the academical village at the university become all the more important. People treasure that sense of palpable connection to history, to place, in a way that enriches their lives.
We're talking with Dan Bluestone of the University of Virginia. Kim is on the program in Charlottesville. Kim, thank you so much for the call. You go right ahead.
Thank you very much. And I totally agree with you, Dan, just like 100%. And finally, somebody has spoken this and is saying this. You know, I do travel and go up and down 81 and go to different towns and different places and, you know, over to different states. And, you know, it is very homogenized. You see the Walmart, you see the Applebee's, you see all the same. And one, it's very boring. And two, it really, we have feel like we've been stripped of our cultural makeup. And and that's what makes us so unique. You know, just even to try to find a cultural bakery or a cultural, just some, any kind of commerce that you might be looking for seems to be gone. And I think we're in that, we're that, you know, immediate quick fix society, want everything new. And everything new isn't all that it's cracked up to be. But, you know, Charlottesville is unique. And, you know, I just, it's sad to see, you know, that we don't have a map out of how, you know, developments are being placed.
Kim, I couldn't agree with you more. And thanks for the call and for the comment. I think that what we really have to do is make sure that in this headlong rush for slightly higher degrees of efficiency, we don't start foreclosing. I mean, imagine, again, in a generational perspective, holding on to and stewarding the landscapes of the center of our region, of Charlottesville City, of the academical village. As we do that and figure out how to actually start building in a different way, the importance of a place like McIntyre Park increases. And it will be all the more important to be able to. I can't imagine the earlier caller talking about needing to get in his car into Greenleaf Park. Greenleaf Park is a neighborhood park. People ought to be walking to Greenleaf Park. We ought to be building a city where people can walk to their recreational and leisure landscapes. You know, we ought to be building in a way that encourages that.
Yeah. We're talking with Dan Bluestone, Director of Historic Preservation at the University of Virginia. His most recent book just released is Buildings, Landscapes, and Memory. I want to pick up on one thing that Kim said that when she was talking about how with the homogenization, when you look at 29 North versus the downtown mall, I mean, there's such a stark contrast. And with 29 North, every community has a 29 North, and you can sort of see this happening increasingly and faster in America. And that really is one of the stories of America in the last half of the 20th century. And you start to lose a real sense of place. Charlottesville is gone. Virginia is gone. And you start to realize that where you are is Best Buy and
right.
Target
yeah.
and Starbucks and Harris Teeter.
Yep.
And that becomes the place. And I guess this is what you would expect in a culture that has become completely saturated and marinated in corporate America, in corporate
right.
life.
Well, and so the question is, whether we really should be turning the major decisions that we're making about our planning, about the nature of our urban landscape, of our community, over to the Free Enterprise Forum, into the Chamber of Commerce. And I would say, well, that's the landscapes they've created. We know what their plan is. And why not try the other plan that apparently people find actually quite attractive? People really do like getting to downtown Charlottesville, getting out of their automobiles, getting into a landscape where they're seeing people conduct business, shop, eat, go to the courts. And all of that is happening in a landscape that actually has a kind of scale that's much more human and much more humane.
Yeah. Well, it's very telling when you have folks like Old Trail, the developers of Old Trail, come in and they said, you know, we want to try to recreate what they did in downtown Charlottesville.
Right.
And I can remember I was sitting in city council chambers back in the mid-90s when the North Park Research Park was presented. Then developers came before city council to give a report. This is what the University of Virginia is going to be building up at up off of 29. And they literally said, our goal is to recreate the downtown mall.
Right.
Albemarle Place, they have said, we want to try to recreate what
yeah.
you see and have like sort of a faux downtown mall. And again, we're seeing this. There's something about this that truly works that you don't see on,
right.
on 29
North. But they only get part of the formula, because the thing that makes the downtown mall work is the fact that there is a certain scale of businesses that can be accommodated there. There are people that literally can walk there. It's nested. It's embedded into a fabric that goes all the way back to the 18th century. One of the things that people don't realize, the oldest thing about downtown Charlottesville, the oldest thing in that landscape, is actually the grid system that was created in 1762 when they made the first move and decided that the streets would be 66 feet wide and that the blocks would be close to an acre in extent. And they set up in a time when people were getting around on foot and by horse, they set up the plan of the town that we have today. And guess what? That plan feels pretty comfortable for people who go to the downtown mall today.
Yeah. And you don't see that when you move out away from that. You start seeing this, a landscape that's been defined by the car. And you start to see neighborhoods with
right.
cul-de-sacs. And we have a few minutes left. I wanted to ask you about historic preservation at the University of Virginia. I know this has become a foremost priority project at UVA that I know you've been engaged mm-hmm. in conversations with. Next spring, we'll see a massive conference at UVA as historic preservationists and scholars from across the country come together to discuss the future of the academical
yep.
village and preserving this great treasure that Jefferson gave us. What are your thoughts on this?
The University of Virginia has done actually an amazing job with historic preservation. They have understood for much longer than just the recent past that the landscape of the academical village is our connection to our founder. And it's not only that it's our connection to the time of Jefferson, it's that Jefferson actually designed this place. Jefferson, has his hand in those buildings that are at the center of the academical village. And so I think for a long time, while trying to make sure that this is a living community, a living university community, the University of Virginia has made a real commitment to keep that palpable, tangible connection to its founder available. And that's the connection that we as staff, as faculty, students, as members of this community, we turn to that as the really crucial and important connection. And there's a huge amount, a tremendous amount for us to learn from that, to focus on. And this is one of the things that's difficult in this community, actually, is Jefferson envisioned an academical village that was built for about 216 students and 10 faculty members. And this is now a university community that has 20,000 students. And the question is, what are the implications of that? And I think there's a number of hugely important lessons in that landscape for what it is to build and construct a vital academic community around a real focus. I mean, it's so powerful to be in that landscape and have a palpable sense of the connection between faculty living in the pavilion, students gathered right around, the library would have been in the rotunda, the classrooms are right there. And that, for us, becomes an immense inspiration and also an immense challenge, because how do you translate that for a community of 20,000 students that can't be quartered in the intimacy of that?
Well, that's with the few minutes we have left, I want to ask you about the success of it sort of creates an anxiety of influence for the growth of the, of the university beyond the academical village. And you start to see things like the John Paul Jones Arena, which inside I think is stunning and beautiful. But on the outside, I see a big brick box with a colonnade on it. You know, I mean, it's sort of a tip of the hat to the academical village, but really lacks in just a missed opportunity, I think.
Yeah, I think preservationists have part of the responsibility for this, and that is that for a long time, the sense has been that we ought to tiptoe around the academical village and not do anything that would distract us from that. And I think it's created, in many cases, a kind of banal landscape, a landscape actually that Jefferson never would have created. Jefferson was committed both to tradition but also to innovation, and had a great feel for inventiveness. And there have been incredible discoveries about building materials, about building forms, about ways to represent community, about ways of negotiating our relationship to the environment, the landscape, to resources. And Jefferson would have been tackling, I think, all of those. And yet we're left often at the university, unfortunately, because of the brilliance of what he created, with this sense that we need to be timid in its immediate surrounds. And this has been, I think, something that generations actually have struggled over. It's not just battles now about the South Lawn Project or about Darden. This has been a struggle that goes all the way back into the 19th century, and that is for people trying to negotiate and navigate the difficult relationship between preservation, a commitment to tradition, and new design. We could, you know, in order for us to accommodate, my students and I once ran an exercise. In order for us to accommodate students the way they were accommodated when the academical village was created, we would have to extend the lawn and the ranges from Charlottesville all the way to North Garden. That's the how far it would have extended. So clearly we have to think about how to build this community in different ways. And the problem is that we've been, I think, kind of lulled into the sense that all we need to do is throw up red brick and white columns and call it a day. And I think that in doing that, we've actually compromised Jefferson's commitment to brilliant design, to real innovation. And that's a tension that's in our community, and preservation's partly responsible for that. And, you know, we negotiate that and figure out our way every time we need a new building at the university.
Dan Bluestone is director of the Historic Preservation Program at the University of Virginia School of Architecture. His most recent book is Buildings, Landscapes, and Memory. You can get discount copies for your Christmas gifts and Hanukkah gifts at the Historical Society this Friday at 5:30 p.m., where Dan will be to meet you and discuss this topic in more detail. Dan, thank you so much. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Coy.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit sevillepodcast.com for more.